Oh, happy Doom Day to everybody, and welcome in for another episode of By Order of the Peaky Blinders. We are so happy that you're with us today. Maybe one of the more highly anticipated, maybe the most highly anticipated episode of a non-peaky content that we have made. He's Josh. I'm Daniel. As always, you can find us on patreon.com/byorderofpeaky, where we slide out content based off of shows and stuff that we watched. We just broke down Fargo, the TV show, and True Detective as well. And Josh, you never know. We might want to talk Dune on Patreon as well after this chat. I would love to get listener feedback as well. Hit us at byorderofpeaky or B-O-O-T, peakyblinders@gmail.com. And I'm gonna let you take the floor here, Josh. You saw it last night. I saw it.
I'm clapping. I almost jumped in, but I had to get our shameless plugs in to our prior episodes and all our email and who we are, whatever, if you haven't listened. But I'm just take a second. Clap.
I was in an perfection. Empty theater. I was in an empty theater and I wanted to stand
really?
Up at the end and clap.
You
saw
it on empty...
Monday at 3 o'clock in South That's Carolina.
Yeah, it was just start to finish, so many different things. Like, I could talk for 2 hours about this. Like, I think we need like multiple pods to talk about multiple different things. Like, we can do a pod about all of the main characters by themselves. Just so good. This is really truly like a live reaction. Like, I saw it last night. We're filming literally in the morning.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
On March 6th, I had to talk about it.
Let's send out a spoiler alert. We are going to spoil Dune. We are going to spoil Dune 1. We are going to spoil Dune 2. Luckily, we don't really have too much future spoilage, so I don't think you guys have to worry too much about that. But if you haven't seen Dune 2, you probably don't want to listen to this yet. And I want to start off with your induction into the world, because I saw Dune 1, and remember, it came out in 2020, 2021. It kind of had a theatrical release, but most people like me saw it on Max. I remember watching it over a couple days because it was so slow and long.
That's what I did.
Yeah, well not a bad way to do it, you know, personally. Like, we're TV show guys. If I were to watch Dune 2 again, there's a possibility that I could watch like an hour 45.
I would watch an hour 45 in one sitting and then like watch the next hour, but I also wasn't upset that I had to sit in a 2 hour and 45, 2 hour and 47.
Yeah.
Is that what it,
it
is?
Didn't,
2 hour and
46
minute
like
movie.
It didn't feel like it.
I had also, unfortunately, honestly, I'm fine with this. I had heard from so many just like TikToks and social media things, and I know you stayed away from social media because you're crazy and you're like, you didn't even want to know like the amount of time it was.
Yeah, I don't want to know anything.
You're insane. But I had heard the last 45 minutes to an hour were like pure, as someone, a TikToker that I follow, he's like the famous movie review guy. He's actually a big Hurricane fan. He said,
"You're a spice."
Yeah, exactly. He said the last 45 minutes or an hour were pure Nirvana. And I think that was like a perfect way to describe it. I don't know if your moment was in the last 45 minutes to an hour, but like I was like lost for a good 10 minutes where like the scene where Paul Atreides kind of gets to Christopher Walken's character and gets to Florence Pugh, like that scene where he finally gets to them, the like 7 minutes before that were like probably some of the most important parts of the movie. And I was like so lost, I don't even remember exactly what happened. Like,
okay,
I know they were fighting, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but I was so enthralled with the score, the sound, the acting, the fighting, which I usually like don't like action, you know what I mean? Like, I don't love it. I don't think it's really acting because it's like stunt doubles, but obviously they're doing it, but it was pure cinema.
Yeah, so let's start with this. So you just saw Dune 1, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you are going to have a different perspective towards this experience than I did.
Right.
But I did watch Dune 1 2 weeks ago. So I feel like if you didn't recently see Dune 1, the fact that it just jumps in to the story, literally before we get like the Paramount pick or whatever it was, you know, Warner Brothers, before we get that, we get the line that is, spice is all.
Yeah,
those who have it have the power, some version of that. And I love
like in
this.
which
Like, I was
like
locked in.
right, which like coming off the first movie, you get the mention of the spice, but you don't understand how important that plot line and that concept is.
So this is where we're gonna have a lot of fun. So you saw the first movie once.
Right.
Having rewatched it, Dune 1 blew my mind a couple of weeks ago because I was able to follow from the get-go. And there's a monologue in the beginning of Dune 1 that kind of just flows by you when you're watching it for the first time, because you're just taking in the world of what's it called? Atrakis?
Arrakis.
Arrakis. You're taking in the world and everything. But in the beginning of Dune 1, they give you the explanation. Spice is a hallucinogenic drug that also creates space travel. Without spice, there is no space travel. And that's something they give you in the beginning of Dune 1 that I definitely just missed my first
Which
watch.
Which is kind of crazy that, like, this whole con, like, I know that there's different, like, universes in Dune. There's different, like, there's plant, like, planets. We're gonna get into a point of Dune where we're, like, kind of outside of the desert here, you know, and just these cities in this world. We're gonna get to planets, I believe.
Yeah, I mean,
space.
What's the people, the Skarsgård butler species? They're on a different planet.
Right. But I think that we're gonna kind of be, like, in outer space, so to say. I'm also trying so hard to not get thrown off from book readers, because book readers love to kind of tell their view of things, and that's fine. Yeah. And I totally understand that, because I'd be the same exact way. But I'm not trying to figure out what has already happened in the book. I don't want to know.
Right. And luckily I don't know any book readers, but
so this is like my hunch is what I'm saying.
And so what I want to do here, because this is going to be very hard for us to stay on topic because it's so exciting. It's almost like when we were doing the live reactions of like season 6 or season 5 live.
Doesn't matter.
We're just like, oh my God, we're trying to go all over.
That's what this is for, you know?
We can do a
more streamlined pod about the plot if we want. But right now, this is just like reaction.
I know, but I just want to start at the beginning because your Nirvana yep. was the yep. end. I thought the first 45 minutes was the best 45 minutes of a movie I maybe have ever seen. You know, it rivals Inception and, you know, the Nolan verse or whatever you want to call it. It was just right off the get-go. We go right into, and it almost, you forget that when Paul killed Bamis, the black guy in the battle at the end of
Jamis.
You forget that they're like still on that same journey. So when they get back towards the home, they are carrying him. I was so good. They have a battle. It's right off the bat. And then Paul says, I'm going to carry him. And I'm like, wow, what dead body are they trying to bring back to their home? You know, they obviously have that assault of the Herrick. Is it Herrickin? The bad people. The Austin Butler species. I think they're called the Herrickins.
Harkonnens.
Harkonnens. So, you know, they get the attack right off the bat. That's how the movie starts. It's a beautiful action-filled scene. And the first movie, what I didn't love about it is there wasn't a lot of that high.
First movie was slow. As someone who watched it for the first time last week, by the way. First time. Because I don't know. I kind of went, as everyone knows, if you listen to this pod, I kind of went through a little bit of a stretch where I was really bad at watching movies during COVID. Just not great. So I watched it for the first time last week. And I will say that even though slow moving was a very slow movie, I watched it in a couple sittings. When you take both of these in tandem, like if you were to sit there right and watch Dune 1 right into Dune 2, like on the same day, like I can imagine that it was a pure cinematic masterpiece.
More than that, it's equivalent. I'm going to put this statement out there. Dune 1 into Dune 2, when I watch it back in 2 years, you know, when my memory's faded and I just go, here we go. New, you know, person in my life, you've never seen Dune. Let's just start from the beginning. Watch these, what is it, probably 5+ hours. It would rival the best season of Game of Thrones. Like, just all together, you go right from Dune 1 into Dune 2. You don't have that years of like, you know, like they just kind of left us with a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of 1. It doesn't feel like the story's complete. Dune 2 does not give any sort of reset. It's not like previously on Dune. I loved that. It was so intelligently written. And I do want to get a little bit, I want you to remind me a little bit, because the movie was so good, but the second half of it had so much. Try to walk me through like where the first hour shine, because it's like, we obviously have them continuing their journey. Realistically, we didn't get much Zendaya in the first movie, and then she just kind of jumps into being a character in the second movie, follows with Paul. They're moving through. There were some pros and cons overall in the movie. I want to get to that in a little bit. I think I only had two things that I brushed up on really harshly. Like, everything else could be a minor nitpick. There were only two things, and I don't want to get to that yet. I want to talk to you about the storytelling elements. Like, where in the first hour were you like most locked in?
So I was locked in terms of like, so this is my perspective. So not like really any moment, but it's very hard to have a 2 hour and 47 minute movie and to be locked in. We felt that way during Oppenheimer from start to finish, 3 hour movie, completely locked in. Killers of the Flower Moon, great movie, but I wasn't locked in from every single moment of the movie. So it's very hard to do that. So I wanted to lay that out. And that's just kind of a nod to Denis Villeneuve. Is that how you pronounce it? It's Denis Villeneuve, I think. Hats off to him for doing that. Because I'll say in the first movie I wasn't enthralled from
I think
start to
it's
finish.
Denis Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve, he caught my attention right away, and kind of gonna. This is my opinion. He did a really good job of not using dialogue, so to say, to explain this is this and this is this and this is this. You know, like right off the bat, it wasn't like a whole like. Oh, we need to pick a messiah because a messiah is important to us because of the prophecy says like if there wasn't that. It was a lot of expression and implied dialogue, so to say, if that makes sense, where it's like, oh, even though they're not telling me that they're looking for a messiah because it's so important, you get that right off the bat. So right away, they see Paul Atreides and they're like, he's our messiah. But it wasn't like a whole like hour and a half. Let's go back and forth and discuss if he's the Messiah or if he's not the Messiah. It's like right away, show us you're the Messiah. Here are these different tests. Here are these different examples of how Paul Atreides is going to show you that he is the one and he's different. And that is where I was kind of hooked right off the bat. Like 10 minutes into the movie, we're seeing different little things. Like he wasn't like doing anything insane from off the bat, but it was kind of like, oh, we can tell he's built different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and
I know I
so
went off on a tangent, but
no,
that's where I was hooked.
I like it. And so what I'm going to do here for those that are listening and seeking help that might have felt like the movie confused them, I will say this one web is going to be very important, because as a rewatcher recently, I could see where people might be lost in certain areas. And the biggest one that I've seen, at least on the internet following the movie, is from the first movie. Once again, you get a lot of shit thrown at you in that first movie. The first time I watched it, I did not catch this. So, in the way that everything is sown by, the people who are whisperers in Game of Thrones, the Reverend Mother and the Belan Jesuit create this myth that there is a messiah. And that's what they give us in the first movie, the beginning of it, the old woman with the black mask that makes Paul put his hand in that box just to test to see if he has good intentions, which I thought was a little bit weird, because then they had Austin Butler's character put his hand in the box and it proved that he was a sociopath. But obviously, different boxes might ask for different things. So in the first movie, the hand in the box was to prove that Paul was not going to be a maniacal leader. And she said, okay, he passes. So that was. Then they slip in this line that say, we are going to spread the word of this, what is it? Al-Habib, Ghassan Al-Habib, or whatever it was. And they go and they send all their little birds to South Arrakis and North Arrakis. And that's where, Zendaya has a great descriptor in the beginning where she says, wait, this is a South maniacal mentality. In the North, we do not believe in this bullshit messiah. And so obviously the Javier Bardem, who I think stole the movie in my mind, just the best character
So
and
good.
the best acting in the movie. He is the religious zealot that got whispers from whenever it was. Let's say it was 8 months ago. The problem is the timeline in this shit with a baby in the belly really threw things out of whack, but I think you just ignore it. Ignore how long anything took since Rebecca Ferguson got pregnant and all that stuff. But so when they get to Arrakis, there's already whispers flirting around about this Messiah. I don't think the Messiah was something that was that's been around for, you know, centuries. I think there's a myth that has risen in them, and then now there is another layer spread by the Jesuit people, and that's where like this talk of the Messiah gets going, and that's where everything starts for me in the second movie, because now he shows up and you've got these sects, the two sects of Fremen, the ones who think he is the, dang, I got to look it up now, the name of the Messiah, but we could just call it Messiah. That's the Muad'Dib.
Oh.
But well, Muad'Dib is the name he takes, he calls which is himself, the rat, right. Which is great. It's like the kangaroo rat.
And that ends up being like, it has like significant meaning, is wise, like a very wise, and knows how to kind of get out.
Yeah,
small, like looks small in stature and not serious and intimidating, but is wise and knows his way around the desert.
Yeah, I think it was a good example of Javier Bardem being like, let me pull some bullshit out of my ass. I've never had somebody want to be a Wadid before, because everyone
could have been improvised. Never know.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone's laughing. Well, I'm talking about the character is improvising. Oh, everyone's laughing 100%. In the back, and he's like, no, this is a good thing. Like, it's the Jon Snow stuff. We want a leader who doesn't want
100%. I want to just kind of go, yeah, go ahead. Side note here. Let's Javier Bardem. Javier Bardem is, I think he's a top five actor right now.
I was about
now.
To like, say.
Of all time.
He is the most underrated movie star of our generation.
He just is so, has he ever had a bad role? Has he ever had a bad role? I do not think so. He plays the villain. He can
I will
be funny.
Say, I do. I'm looking now. He was the King Triton in the new Little Mermaid remake. So I guess he took the bag there. But he's usually has bangers. All bangers.
I didn't even know that. But Sicario, No Country for Old Men,
Skyfall. His Skyfall character is one of my favorite ever.
I mean, I think his character, No Country for Old Men, is the scariest character of all time.
I mean, that's what all of Fargo is based
right,
off of that.
100%.
So his name is Stilgar. For those that may Stilgar. Not want to follow who Javier Bardem is, he is the leader of the Fremen, who we met for like 10 minutes in the first movie.
Yep.
And then he all of a sudden becomes like this main character in the early moments of the second movie.
I want to just kind of point out like why I thought his character is just so significant. Obviously, he's high up amongst the Fremen, and they all trust him, and he's wise. He's kind of like very prophetic, and he's kind of like the teacher of the movie, is the way he kind of piggybacking off of my point of not having to use so much dialogue to explain what things are. Because if you talk to a book reader, and one of my best friends read the book, and or the books plural, said that there's just so much, like there's literally a dictionary in the back and there's like an encyclopedia explaining things that he hasn't seen this one yet. And I was literally texting him right now, texting him as we speak. He's saying, he's like, I don't know. He's like, there's so much to explain. Like, how are you? And I'm like, obviously if they were to explain every little nuanced detail, the movie would be 9 hours long, and we can't have that. So Javier Bardem's character, Stilgar, what he did, what he would fill those little holes. If you were like, I'm a little confused, and he would explain, for example, in all the little scenes where, Wadib slash Paul Atreides
slash
would
Ursu
do
slash
right.
You know, he's got like nine
yeah,
names.
Yeah, Usu.
He's also the
whenever Mahdi. Whenever he would do something that was really important, you knew that it was important because he would go quote unquote as written. So you knew that was part of the prophecy. So you knew that like things were kind of lining up based off of what's supposed to happen. And there's a whole entire like 10 pages where they're explaining the prophecy, blah, blah, blah. But here, the simple words as written explains that. So that's why I thought it was just so good in terms of storytelling and writing and screenplay and acting and directing all around, because it just took a whole entire tandem to make that happen. So I thought that his character, Stilgar's character, kind of was like the narrator, so to say, if that makes sense.
And that's a great segue into the real narrator, played by Florence Pugh, the daughter of the Emperor. So Florence Pugh's character is named Irulan. We actually get her right off the top, giving us a bit of a reset and saying, hey, listen, in the first movie, you only knew about these three places. You knew about Harkonnen Land. You knew about Paul's land, whatever. I don't know the name of their planet that got attacked. And then you knew about Arrakis. Now we find out that there is, and this is where like right off the bat, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember hearing that Star Wars was based off of Dune. Because when we get introduced to the Emperor, Shaddam the IV, played by Christopher Walken, that's where the Star Wars of all gets really locked in. I'm like, oh, this is connecting for me. And so Florence Pugh is this.
By the way, the House Atreides is from Caladan or Caladan.
Okay, Caladan. And that's the one that got destroyed at the very
Sorry.
end of the very middle to start the second part of the first movie. But Florence Pugh, I'm just going to call her Florence Pugh. Florence Pugh's character is in the training of our main evil woman, which is the Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother, played by Charlotte Rampling, who's like one of the OG evil women actresses around. You know, like you see her and you're just like, ooh, like she's going to be evil. But she starts to realize, she starts gaining an
Which
act of
sorry,
understanding.
sorry, sorry. I have to say, which they're so House Tyrell, right?
Tyrell.
The what?
Yeah, in Game of
No, it's
Thrones,
like House
right?
Tyrell from Game of Thrones. It's so like the Bene Gesserit are like House Tyrell. All
Very,
right, go
very
on.
much so. Very much so. And they're
Go
the
on,
ones that
sorry.
sowing. But it's clear that once Florence Pugh realized that her dad ordered the killing of House Atreides, she's starting to realize, wait a minute, I think it was the Reverend Mother who created that, and I think she's bad. So we get to start to see this little bit of
Which
storyline
I
building
found that
there.
really funny. I found that funny how it was like, of course I did. Why else do you think he did it? Which is kind of was like a play on like woman in
Puppet.
power,
Yeah, like a
right?
puppet.
And woman kind of controlling men, which I loved.
So here's my take, Josh, and this is it's tough. This was one of the worst casting decisions in like major movie history in my
Oh
mind.
God, what?
Christopher
Oh, come on.
Walken as the Emperor
Yeah, I
was
guess.
horrendous. He was
Yeah.
horrendous. He you can't have one of the most global faces try to play like not a star in the movie. You know, it's like I'm not
Yeah.
watching Emperor Shaddam. I'm watching Christopher Walken. It's just like you can't have Tom Cruise go and I'm just telling you, you're watching Tom Cruise when he's on the screen. Christopher Walken took me out of every scene he was in. He nearly corrupted what were the bigger scenes at the end, and it was a shame. But at the end of the day, I can get through it. But I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy with that. I like you
I
can't just give
disagree.
me
I
a lesser
disagree.
actor there. I just
I
don't. It doesn't need to
disagree.
be Christopher Walken. Go ahead.
You needed somebody older. You need
Sure.
somebody older. The only problem is like it's just like his voice. And I mean, I just think of Animal Cowbell. Like,
Yeah,
you
you
know,
just can't
you
make
know,
it.
so I
You
think
can't
he's
make it
like
one of
kind of
the.
comedic and
Yeah.
sometimes.
No,
Not
I
all the
agree.
time.
I
But
mean, yeah.
We don't know what role he'll play in the next movies. He's obviously an important character. You know, he
Yeah.
might have a lot more dialogue and a lot more impact in the next
I
movies, but
hope not. I hope not.
I would have loved to have seen more of like an older evil Star Wars villain, emperor ruler type of guy, you know?
Just or someone I've never seen before on screen, and like you don't think twice that that's the Emperor. But
I'm
like
trying to think.
when you put such a notable face up on that screen, that's Christopher Walken. I didn't see the Emperor talking, and so like that's where I got taken out of it a little bit in those scenes. But luckily, the rest of the movie, the rest of the star power, it was just so well carried. Zendaya
Let's
absolutely
talk about Zendaya.
blew it out of the
Let's talk
water.
about Zendaya. What are your thoughts about her character and the way she portrayed her?
Perfect.
Chani.
I wouldn't want anyone else to play that character.
Right.
Her
Dude.
acting was top class. Her
So
flirting
good.
was incredible.
Yep,
People,
yep.
you know, there's like instant reviews that say they didn't feel chemistry. I couldn't disagree more. It was like your perfect instance
That's
where you
funny
have.
because Sabrina's my girlfriend. She just texted us that they didn't really play into their romance enough.
I disagree. I think that, you know, you have to remember that these people are not spending their whole lives dating. Like it's easy like to just assume that potentially both virgins and maybe both have never been with people to flirt with. You know, it's just so funny to watch it. I felt that like teenage nerves and angst and flirty. And when they first kissed, it was electric, Josh. I mean, it was so electric when they
Do we
kissed.
know how old they're supposed to be in the book? No,
No,
I'm
but I'm okay with
curious.
it. I'm okay
If
with
we
it.
have any book readers out there, let us know because I'm curious. But she was really good.
All
She
right,
has like
15.
eyes.
15 is the answer.
Okay.
So that
She
even
has
further my
eyes.
furthers my
Yeah.
point. Yeah.
She has eyes that could cut through glass. Like those things. I mean, obviously, like even like the special effects, obviously, like the blue eyes. But she has like her stare like could kill somebody. And she's so, I'm sure that it took her a lot of professional coaching to get to that point, unless she's just naturally gifted like that. But I thought that, as I said, same concept of not needing dialogue to explain emotion and explain how things are. Like you could just tell the way she was thinking and what she wanted to say just by her look. And I don't think many actors and actresses can pull that off. I think Austin Butler can do that. Not necessarily in this movie,
I
but I
thought he
mean, some.
crushed it. I thought he crushed it as
That's
well.
another whole conversation, but
Let's
we'll
save
get to
it. Let's
that.
save it.
But I really want to just tip the cap to Zendaya here. I think she just did such a good job playing this character who's a badass, who is also sentimental and also has vulnerabilities. I think that was like kind of like in season in the first movie, I'm like, she's just like your typical, grungy
We
woman
really,
who didn't have emotion, is what I'm saying.
we get a total of like 83 seconds of screen
No,
time
I know, but
during the
I'm saying
first
it's like
movie.
even leading into the beginning of the second movie, I'm like, she's just like, oh fuck this guy. I'm all about that action. Like meet me outside, whatever. But here, you really see her vulnerability and how it affects her, the character, and it kind of humanizes them a little bit. And I like how Dune does that, is it kind of breaks that glass of like sci-fi to like humanization, which is very Star Wars-esque.
So I thought her name the whole time was like Johnny, like
Yeah, so it's
JAWN. I
Chani.
see it. I see it. And I thought her relationship with her friends was really genuine. I really enjoyed the crew that they had. The one that kind of believed in him as a messiah, the one that didn't believe at all, the one that was just kind of like there to support her as like a romantic partner and someone that she was starting to seduce. That was really good. I'm gonna be honest, I'm going through this IMDb. Almost everyone crushed their role. Lady Margot Fenrin, who had to sleep with Austin Butler's character, who was from Mission Impossible, Lisa Dew, she crushed it. Loved that scene. Really enjoyed when they didn't drug the Iraq Aristides person so that he would actually fight with Austin Butler's Fade Rautha, and then he got up to Starsguard, and it was like, "You're welcome, nephew." I loved it because it was genuine. You don't want to just have like an easy kill. And have that be your thing. You want to actually battle. And like, I forgot about that scene. That's where we were. I
So
thought that's when
good.
we were really getting to a crescendo, when we got to see the Harkonnen Island and we got to see the ink blots as
Yep.
fireworks. And here's his name.
Little details that like
Crushed it.
imagine how much time they spend thinking about that. Like, we need these ink blots to be fireworks. Like how like there's so many things going on at once that it's like such, that's, which is why it's a movie you could see three, four, five times and be blown away every time.
Greg Fraser was the cinematography. He won the Oscar for the first one. This is going to be like, he's going to be
Win
like
it again.
negative 7,000 in
Win it
Vegas to win
again.
it.
Yeah.
And then Hans Zimmer won the Oscar for his score in the
Oh.
first one. He changed the score so much. Every time you went to a new
Dude.
land, you went to like this grayscale metallic audio for the Harkonnens and then the heated score for the Fremens.
Oh
And
my
then
God.
you went over and yeah, it was,
I
oh.
saw this in Dolby Digital,
Ooh.
which was the loudest movie theater experience I've ever gone through in my life. And like, if it wasn't such a good movie, it would have been borderline unenjoyable and painful. Like my eardrums were hurting, but I was so enthralled with the film that I didn't give a fuck. The score was so good, and what I'll say about Hans Zimmer is his ability to change the way that he is, I guess directing, or what is it, composing? Is that what it is, I guess? The way that he's composing and producing the music to be applicable to the movie at hand. Like you look at this score and then you look at like a score like Inception or like a Dark Knight, like three comp like three I would say Inception and Dark Knight are more similar, but Dune was a completely different type of score and he hit it out of the motherfucking park. Grand Slam, one of his best scores. I can't wait to listen to it.
On like Spotify or something, right?
That one scene where Paul is kind of he's on the grandfather worm and it has like that like cry that like that desert cry and it's
The
and then you
grandfather worm,
yeah the
yeah.
grandfather worm, which was one of my favorite scenes. Daniel didn't love that scene.
No, 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 hold on. Let's get to it now. So I do want to quickly go over me and your maybe biggest nitpicks with the movie.
Yes.
I already talked about the casting of
Wait, hold on,
Rautha.
but
Go
before
ahead,
we
go
do
ahead,
that,
go ahead. Yeah, go
since
ahead.
we already kind of talked about the Austin Butler, I want to go into Austin Butler really quickly until we go into nitpicks,
Okay.
because like we're kind of leaving out the whole entire Harkonnen clan, because that was
Yeah, that
an
might have to be
amazing.
next pot. We're gonna have a tough time.
No, for sure. Whenever they were back into Harkonnen world, I was fucking like drawn in. I was like kind of borderline scared. Like they fucking scared me. Stellan Skarsgård, so good.
Killing women just to feed the other women was nuts.
Yeah, oh, 100%. Stellan Skarsgård, by the way, fucking incredible. You could see why Alexander Skarsgård, I mean, where he gets it from. And I thought that maybe, like, I mean, I guess he played that role perfectly, but I think that back to your Christopher Walken point, like, we need to have someone of like that caliber and that like evilness play the Christopher Walken role. But anyways, I digress. But Austin Butler, dude, I mean, and I'm gonna give Sabrina another shout out. She was like, she was and she thought that a freaky looking Harkin and Austin Butler was attractive, and I don't blame her.
I thought he was pretty attractive too.
He's incredible, man. He just the way he was like cocking his head, how he was like kind of like he was like biting, he was like kind of like his gums were, you know what I mean? Like he was doing like little like the little like click click with his mouth and whatever. Like he is such a good method actor.
Yeah, and I will say, in Masters of the Air, he has the Elvis voice. I've
Yeah.
watched videos. I don't
I
think
have thoughts about
he's never
that.
going to get rid of it. He said it. He's like, guys, it's changed me. When you spend 2 years talking in a certain way, you're not going to go back to your Disney Channel voice.
I think
And
he's
I
like
had no
so
issue.
butthurt, by the way, that he like didn't win the Oscar for that because he like works, and that's why he's like, yeah, this is how good I was. I'm gonna keep the voice.
Probably. And so, wait, I want to clear up one more thing because I'm kind of reading about it here. We didn't talk at all about the water of life. So, for those that were
Okay.
confused about it, the water of life is poison that gives you the memories of every ancestor in the lineage. So, that's where, is it Jessica? Is that her name? I think it's Jessica.
Yeah, it
It's
is.
such a normal name. When she gets the news that the Reverend Mother is dying and needs to be the replacement, she realizes she doesn't have another choice because they said they're going to kill her. That's when she gets all the memories, and that's when she could put together the pieces of the future puzzles. And that's obviously when Paul drinks the water as well later in the movie. He then gets to see, and I want to talk about this, right? He gets to see our girl, our Peaky connection.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Gina Gray comes in. And she is certain to be a main character in the next movie, and she
Oh,
is
yeah.
playing the unborn fetus sister of Paul, and telling him the truth that he is a Harkonnen,
Insane twist.
that the same thing that we saw Lea Seydoux do to Austin Butler, they made Rebecca Ferguson do to the Baron, and then they wiped her memory of it, and that is a fucking mind fuck.
A huge twist, like that, I did not expect. And in that moment, I was worried. I mean, Paul
I thought he was
Atreides,
going bad. I thought he was going real bad
he definitely
ASAP.
is on that path. Like, I don't think that that's like negotiable, or even, I don't think it's spoiling anything for anyone who knows what's going to happen later on the line. Like Paul Atreides is going to turn. He is going
He
to
said
have,
it. He warned it.
yeah,
He warned it.
he is going to have an Anakin Skywalker to Darth Vader arc, I fear. And
Well,
in
and
that,
it was just very Star Wars when he's like, instead of it's like, you're my father, it's like, oh, you're my grandfather.
right.
I liked
But
it.
he also, like, in that moment when he was commanding the Arrakis crowd, and the moment where he was the Messiah, that was Timothée Chalamet's. Like, he's already arrived in Hollywood amongst one of the greatest actors we have. That was his. I'm young actors, young actors.
No, sorry. My face went weird there for a second because I just realized, and I thought about it in the movie, wouldn't the Baron be his dad?
No. It was
But
his
if he
grandfather because
impregnated his mom.
Jessica is his daughter. The new Reverend Mother, his mother is his daughter.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I thought that they said that Paul was a
What?
result of Jessica sleeping with the Baron. It's
No, that's not what they
that
said.
Rebecca's mom slept with the Baron.
Correct. Correct.
Oh, I complete. So who's Paul's dad? Is it still our guy
Paul's
who
dad is
we're sure eyes Oscar
Oscar
Isaac,
Isaac.
Oscar
Yeah,
Isaac.
Oscar Isaac.
Oh,
100%.
wow.
Yeah.
I missed
Yeah,
that.
yeah,
I missed. All
yeah.
right, well, that's why we pawn.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Listen, it's not an easy thing to be 100% on. So, you know,
That one
famous
got
all
me.
you want.
I thought it
So
was his dad.
that's his grandfather and his cousin. That's why he said cousin to Austin Butler.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now let's talk a
So
little bit here at the
yeah.
end of this first Dune Part Two episode that we're gonna do. I'm confident we'll do more.
We're gonna do more.
Confident. unbelievable riding the worm scene. And not to mention, like, he wakes up, he's a little sick, and Zendaya's like, hey, we could postpone it. We don't even know what they're postponing. And then he's like, no, I'm okay. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, he's got to do the most important thing that might kill him ever. And if he doesn't successfully do it, he's not accepted as a Fremen. And it was awesome. The whole scene was awesome.
Fremen.
The whole scene was awesome.
Incredible. Like, I was, that captured me. Like, it was kind of like a side scene that, like, was such a good scene. Like, it wasn't like a main plot, like, development. Obviously, it was to point that he was built different and he can do things in the desert that not many people can just pick up, that you're kind of born into. Yeah. I think it was kind of to show, like, you and I had a nitpick that, like, after this incredible scene where he did this thing, they were like applauding. They're like, he is the Messiah if he did this. Then they were all just doing it, you know?
Yeah, it was a little too convenient that they could after, use the worms as transportation.
After second thought, I do think that it's kind of like a genetic trait that if you are Fremen, then you're able to do it without training. Like, it's kind of like,
yeah,
you know?
I'm good with that. I just don't love, like, how they were able to, like, control where the worms were going to go, and then they had them going side by side. But it wasn't a big deal because it was 2 seconds. It wasn't like they carried on for 10 minutes about it. Here's my other issue with the movie. The Josh Brolin character.
Oh, hated it.
It just didn't fit.
It
didn't fit. Now all of a sudden we have, like, scavengers on this island that were like, who are they? And, like, what are they selling?
We kind of have these people who survived the war and they were kind of collateral damage.
But
in
they
terms
said
of
they
not
all
dying.
Got sent back. Remember, that's what they said. They were like, oh, we saved. Brolin is like, yeah, we saved a bunch of people and sent them all back. It's, I don't know. And then he just starts and all that stuff. It just wasn't my favorite.
They're all like refugees. Yeah. That's the way that I interpreted it. Now, I didn't tell you this because me and Daniel were texting our reactions back and forth earlier. And I was like, I'm going to tell you my nitpick and I'm not going to, and it has to be your same nitpick. The scene where Beast Raban, who's Rabbit, whatever, how you pronounce it, is Dave Bautista's character. Josh Brolin, obviously, his character is out for revenge. His name is Gurney. He is out for revenge because Batista killed his family and gave him the scar, and so that's, like, his kind of purpose. And then he, like, finally meets him. You think it's gonna be this kind of like the mountain versus the hound esque kind of battle? No, he just kills him in, like, one shot, and then he's like, "For my friends."
Yeah,
and I'm like, you made this corny. Like, this is not a corny movie.
Dave Bautista was a cuck the whole movie, and I was okay with it because he didn't have a lot of screen time. If he was on the screen a ton, I would have been okay. But just the Brolin of it all just didn't feel, it felt like it was out of place. It felt a little out of place, but I think we should put a pin in it here. And I want to hear back from listeners, and I want to do another episode that does even more dives. And we have still characters we barely touched on.
So many,
we didn't
dude.
Talk about the end of the movie yet. We got so much, but as always,
we can do a pod about, like, the plot and the end
we
of the
movie. We
could
do a plot
about
the
last
20
hour.
Minutes. Yeah. Just the last 20,
but
I
will
want
say,
to do that. Go ahead.
I just want to say this cause it's on the fresh of my mind, and I want to hear their thoughts, but the scene, I kind of mentioned it, the scene where Paul becomes the Messiah, and everyone knows what scene I'm talking about, when he's commanding the Iraqis crowd. That was Timothy Chalamet's best acting moment of his career, by far. The ability to flip the switch, and also the plot flipped the switch, where it's like, he was this kind of little goody-two-shoes, and he turned into this fucking Messiah potential villain. And I thought that was such a good turn, because a lot of the times, they do that too quickly. And
yeah,
I thought that
I
was
loved
perfect.
It. Perfect. I loved it.
Anyways.
I loved it. But in very Dune 1 form, we are going to leave you with suspense here, and we are certainly going to come back and talk about more. But I want to get some responses from you guys. All right. So
yes,
BOOTPeakyBlinders@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you again soon. He's Josh. I'm Daniel. And we've been through.